Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Physics is one of the oldest fields of scientific study, with some of the most mature theories and laws about how the world works. But those theories don't always match up perfectly with each other. The way physics is explained if you're talking about bridges and airplanes is typically different than if you're talking about quarks or electrons. For that matter, some ideas that seek to explain how our world works seem to fly in the face of our lived experiences and the observations we make. My next guest is trying to bridge those gaps using quantum physics, and fair warning, it's pretty mind-blowing. But unlike many others, he says quantum physics is something we should be able to understand. Sean Carroll is a theoretical physicist at the California Institute of Technology, host of the Mindscape podcast, and author of several books. The latest is Something Deeply Hidden, Quantum Worlds and the Emergence of Space-Time. Sean, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thanks for having me.
You frame this book as a step toward resolving a crisis in physics that arose in 1927. So take us back to 1927. What was happening and what was this crisis that arose?
Well, the crisis was the birth of quantum mechanics. It had taken a while. Quantum mechanics, the first stirrings of quantum mechanics were in 1900. But by 1926-27, they had put together what we still use today and still teach in textbooks as the modern version of quantum mechanics. But it had a huge problem, and it still has a huge problem. Namely, it seems that quantum mechanical systems, like a little electron, some other tiny subatomic particle that we use quantum mechanics to describe, seems to evolve one way when we're looking at it and another way when we're not looking at it. And this is satisfying to nobody. Like, why should looking at something have any effect on anything? What do you even mean, looking at it? And so we try to solve this problem, but to be honest, we haven't tried very hard. So I try to make the point in the book that we should be trying harder.
Well, this idea, as you say, that's not satisfying to anybody is actually, I would say, far more than not satisfying. It's actually deeply disturbing to a lot of people, this idea that there is some deep and perhaps unresolvable distinction, difference between what we observe and what really is. I mean, that has led to this idea that maybe quantum is not understandable. Is that why there hasn't been the effort, you think, to actually try to delve more deeply into quantum physics and really understand what's going on?
It's a great question why physicists have decided to do this, have decided to sort of put this whole big problem aside and focus on other things. One, you know, to be fair, there were plenty of other interesting things to focus on, right? We're talking about the birth of nuclear physics and particle physics and astrophysics and a whole bunch of cool ideas that you could explore without touching the measurement problem of quantum mechanics. But I think the other one was, you know, it seemed a little disreputable to sort of bang your head against this idea that was quasi-philosophical when you had a theory that worked well enough, even if you didn't completely understand it. And I think that today we've reached the point in the development of physics where that refusal to try to understand quantum mechanics is holding us back in our actual other physics areas.
So explain that a little bit more. What is it that we need to understand, or I guess maybe why do we need to understand this about quantum physics? I mean, we have landed rovers on Mars. We have cell phones and computers that function, and for that matter, bridges that function every day. We have clearly some sufficient understanding of the physical world to have done all of these things. What more would we gain by understanding quantum physics?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. In fact, we can use quantum mechanics incredibly well. It's the best tested and implemented scientific theory in all of history. But where we're using it is sort of in this microscopic realm where you have atoms and electrons and other kind of particles, putting them together to make lasers or transistors and so forth. But these days, we're being a little bit more ambitious. We'd like to describe the universe, the Big Bang, black holes, places where gravity is very important. And famously, gravity has resisted being brought into the quantum mechanical fold. We can quantize, if you like, all the other known forces of nature, but gravity, it doesn't quite work. And so I try to make the case that should we really be surprised that we don't understand quantum gravity when we don't even really understand quantum mechanics?
Well, Sean Carroll, the name of this book that you've written about understanding quantum mechanics is Something Deeply Hidden. Would you tell us what that something deeply hidden actually is?
Yeah, the quote is from Einstein. Einstein is one of the heroes of the book because he actually gets a little bit of a bad reputation. Everyone thinks Einstein was smart, but he was actually even smarter than we give him credit for, because when we were having these debates over quantum mechanics in the 1920s, people sometimes say, well, Einstein had grown a little bit old, he'd lost touch, he wasn't able to keep up. But in fact, he appreciated the difficulties of quantum mechanics as well as anyone, and he understood quantum mechanics itself as well as anyone. And the quote is actually in a different context. He was talking later in life about when he was a kid and he was first handed a magnetic compass. And he noticed that wherever he would turn, the compass would still know which direction north was in. And he said, there must be something deeply hidden that explains why this is doing this mysterious thing. And that was also Einstein's attitude toward quantum mechanics. It's not that the theory was wrong. It's that we don't understand it. There must be something that explains why things are happening the way they are. Now, my favorite example, my favorite version of what is actually happening is what's called the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, which was proposed a year or two after Einstein passed away, so he didn't really know about that.
But still, it goes back quite a ways. It's not necessarily a new idea. So what is the many worlds? Is it a hypothesis, a theory at this point to try to explain what's going on kind of under the hood with quantum mechanics?
Yeah, if you believe in quantum mechanics at all, if you believe that the way that we describe quantum systems has some relationship to reality, in other words, it's not just a bookkeeping device, then you believe that a tiny particle like an electron can be in what we call a superposition. It's not necessarily located at this position or that position or spinning in one way versus the other way. It's a combination, a superposition of all these different possibilities.
It's probabilistic. It's kind of, there's a probability of it being any or all of those places and in those conditions at the same time.
I'm trying to be very precise here. The probabilities come in when you look at it.
Uh-huh.
But when you're not looking at it, it really is in all the places at once. It's not that we don't know or that it will be. It's that it really is in the combination of all these different places. That's what a superposition is. And so in ordinary quantum mechanics, we say it's in a superposition before we look. When we look, the electron or whatever snaps into some particular value. We always see it located one place rather than the other. What Hugh Everett, who was the student who invented many worlds, said is, what you're forgetting is that you are a quantum mechanical system. And that means that you can be in superpositions too. And in fact, what naturally happens when you observe an electron is that you and the electron evolve very simply into a superposition of the electron was there and you saw it was there, plus the electron was over here and you saw it over here. And furthermore, all of those different parts of the wave function of the universe, as we call it, describe different worlds. That's why it's called the many worlds theory of quantum mechanics.
Okay, I've often wished that I had multiple of me to try to get everything done in my day. but I wanted all of those me's in the same world. And what you're saying is that I guess I'm everywhere doing everything that I could possibly be doing, but all in different worlds. There's an infinite different set of realities?
That's right. Every time a tiny quantum system like an electron becomes entangled with the big outside world, the universe branches into multiple possibilities. And yes, there's multiple copies of you being created many, many, many times per second, but also all of the things you have to do and all of your worries are also being duplicated every second. So you don't really catch up anymore just because of quantum mechanics.
I think I'm feeling actually farther behind
exactly
now than I was. It's not actually helping to have multiple of me. I mean, this seems like a really extreme, perhaps, version of what to me at least is a more common idea, which is the multiverse idea, that there are multiple universes, perhaps an infinite number of universes. But this is just kind of bringing that down, well, I guess to the quantum level, that there's an infinite number of everything within the universe. And it kind of destroys the idea that there is any reality.
I don't know. I think that there is a reality, but it's just a much, much richer reality than we're used to from our everyday experience. And after all, why should we expect that reality is just what we see in our everyday experience. This has been the lesson of science since Copernicus, that reality is much, much bigger than we tend to give it credit for. We tend to be pretty parochial when we approach reality. And you're right, this is different than the multiverse that cosmologists talk about, but what it has in common is, in neither case, in neither the quantum many worlds nor the cosmological multiverse, did scientists just, like, sit around after dark in their dorm rooms and say, like, what if there were all these universes out there? You know, in both cases, they predict the existence of all these universes based on the equations that they derived to explain the world you do see. So the argument is that the simplest explanation of what we see predicts a whole bunch of stuff we don't see, so we might as well believe in that stuff until we have good reason not to.
You say that your understanding of quantum physics and many worlds to you leads to a deeper and richer understanding of reality. And I wonder if you could try to share with us how your understanding of your reality is richer because of this, when this idea is, to many people, completely off-putting and seems to deny reality, make things seem perhaps the exact opposite of a richer reality, less real.
Yeah, no, I think that's a perfectly fair issue. And as you point out before, in the book, I take pains to point out that we don't know that many worlds is right. There are absolutely alternatives that are worth taking very seriously. But many worlds is sort of the most lean and mean version of quantum mechanics that there is. I know that sounds absurd because there's a potentially infinite number of extra worlds.
Doesn't sound very lean or mean.
Doesn't sound very lean or mean. But it has the fewest equations. It has the fewest concepts. It has the fewest ideas into it. Every other version of quantum mechanics can be thought of as start with many worlds and then dirty it up, add new things to it, because there's all these other worlds there and we don't like them.
Sean Carroll is author of Something Deeply Hidden, Quantum Worlds and the Emergence of Space-Time. Sean, thank you. I was told that my mind would be blown speaking with you, and I think we definitely accomplished that.
My pleasure. That's what I'm here for.
And that's our show. Until next week, I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.